Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, issue number 40. This is a very special issue. This is going to be the time when we name our first Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthos inductee. We've done in the past, we've each come up with our very own nominee that we would like to see get a fucking added to their name. So as usual, I've got Ethan with me.
Hello.
And I've got Shay.
Hello.
And then, like last time, we have Mr. John from the Magna Boardcast with the added flavor of Mr. Chris. How are you guys tonight?
Doing great. Doing well. I'm glad to be bringing the flavor.
Blinging the flavor.
Yeah.
So yeah, the way this is going to work is we're going to open up with a segment where we just talk a little bit about the history of the Zone of Ruthos, and then we're each going to be talking about our nominee. And then at the end, we're going to have an outro segment and name who is the newest inductee into the Zone of Ruthos. But before we do any of that, we have a segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. This is when this is a segment that we talk about news that's relevant to us geeks. We always seem to open it up with the news that interests me the most, and what news would interest me more than some casting information for The Dark Knight Rises? Miss Anne Hathaway has been named as and confirmed as playing Selina Kyle in the upcoming Dark Knight Rises.
Nice.
Thoughts, guys?
I love me some Anne Hathaway. She's gorgeous.
She is.
Classy lady.
I think she's going to do a great job. What is the age difference between her and Christian Bale? Do we know?
Well, I know that Anne Hathaway is 28, and I do not know how old.
He's got to be like 35.
I don't know how old he is. Why don't you guys talk a little bit, and I'll find out.
Sure. Well, I think Anne Hathaway is one of those actresses that, to me, embodies sort of old style Hollywood. Just that sort of image she's presented of herself, and I think it's great. I think it's great casting.
I do too. I think I've said on the show before that I have great hopes for Anne Hathaway. I just think that she's going to be one of the best actresses from our time. She had a weird start out with the Princess Diaries and stuff like that. And so she kind of at first, she kind of got painted with that brush of, you know, being like that young person's actress. But she's really, you know, coming to her own and being a very good adult actress. According to Wikipedia, Christian Bale is 36 years old. So he's eight years older than her. And, you know, I think that's acceptable. There's a greater age difference between Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively. She's 22 and he's 37, I believe. So, I mean, that's an even bigger age difference. What do you guys think?
I definitely like it. I'm a little more excited about Tom Hardy is cast as Bane.
Bane?
I really like Tom Hardy. I've gone back and watched some more of his early work, and he's got some good movies coming up. He's going to be Mad Max. Some other big roles coming up.
Well, I like him in Inception, too.
Yeah, very good in Inception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like Anne Hathaway a lot. I think she does have a long career ahead of her, and I'm interested to see how she kind of fits in as Selina Kyle in the Nolan universe.
Yeah.
It will be very interesting to see that.
I expect it to be kind of severe, actually. Someone with a little more pain behind her than the sort of the goofier... I don't know. What's her name? The girl who played Selina Kyle in...
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer did a very painful sort of rendition of...
It was painful, but for different reasons. I did not like that performance
The whole thing in that second Batman was a little goofy. It really led into the really, really comedic, and more than comedic slapstick almost, number three and four.
Sure.
I think a lot of that comes from Tim Burton, too, as a director. It was almost kind of playful in a way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can see where that movie is connected to a Nightmare Before Christmas, and that kind of like it's somewhat serious, and there's a certain darkness to it, but at the same time, there's a laugh track going on at the same time. I could see this being a much more like, oh my heart hurts for these people kind of movie.
Thing that John brought up about being excited about Chris Hardy as Bane, I am too. Tom Hardy as Bane. I am too, because the way I put it, I told Ethan and I told John this, mm-hmm. that I would have much rather see him play Hugo Strange, but more than that, I want to see Bane done right, because they just slaughtered him in Batman and Robin.
Oh, that was horrid.
I mean, it was just, it wasn't good, and he can be such an interesting character. I think I might have picked him as one of my top six favorite Batman villains. I think I did. But
Bane, yeah, I think you did.
I tied him with Hush, if I remember right, and everyone's all like, boo, ties. But yeah, that's going to be interesting. I am looking forward to seeing this movie a lot, and it's good that, you know, we're getting past the casting speculation. We can actually just kind of get the movie. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, get the movie done.
Yeah. What other news you got, Ethan?
Well, one of the big news for me, obviously, is they released an image of Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man in the costume, and Emma Stone also let it slip that they're going to be doing mechanical web shooters in the new movie.
Cool.
The image, they got a high-res image online of him in the Spider-Man getup, and it doesn't look too bad. It is different from the Tobey Maguire stuff, obviously. It looks really good, honestly. And Andrew Garfield, who is in his 20s, I believe.
Yeah, he's 26.
Looks darn damn young in this as Peter Parker. So it's kind of interesting to see. And because I haven't seen him in, he was in, the movie you were just telling me about, the Social Network.
He was very good in that.
I really want to see that.
He was very good in that. But yeah, I like the costume. I mean, I've seen people complain about it on the site that shall not be named. But you know, I say fuck them. I kind of like the thing I see everybody complaining about is the spider emblem. And who cares? I mean, I can't tell if it's different or if it's battle damaged myself.
It looks battle damaged.
I really think it looks battle damaged to me, because he looks like he's been through some sort of a fight. Just in the image, but you know, who knows at this point?
Mm-hmm. He's spray painted. You know, he's spray painted it on. You know, had like a stencil spray painted it, because it looks like there's like paint drips going down. Like you see the two drips going down.
It looks a little bit more believable as something that a high school kid could come up with, I think. But given our day and age,
something he made in his room with long underwear, only with some color.
Yeah, this looks like it's made out of like a latex or something like that. But
it does look like some sort of Kevlar.
Yeah, but yeah, it's cool. I like it. And you know, I've been underwhelmed at best at the whole idea of doing a Spider-Man reboot. My thought on that hasn't really changed. I still think it's too soon. But if the movie's coming out, I want it to be good, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's shaping up all right.
No matter what you say, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So. I mean, the truth is they're doing four different comic books of Spider-Man, and they've had like two simultaneously running cartoon shows of them before. I think that they've figured out that Spider-Man just sells so well that they can just keep doing it, and they don't have to really worry about continuity all that much, and just make another one, change it around a little bit. Let's make another one.
What else do we got?
I've got some two bits of news about everyone's favorite Dungeons and Dragons.
Whose? The one to be mine.
First off, let me load it up here. First off, the interesting thing is Wizards of the Coast, the people who put out Dungeons and Dragons, announced that they're going to stop doing pretty much all the sets of the D&D miniatures line, except for the big special sets. They're discontinuing the collectible line pretty much entirely at this point. So
it kind of sucks. Those are cool.
Yeah,
I can only imagine
they're
going to
put out quote special sets, but they haven't said what that means at this point. But they're going to discontinue doing any regular sets at this point. So
I would guess they're planning on passing that over to another company that's dedicated to miniatures and figurines as opposed to other stuff.
I strongly
doubt it. It says they're going to continue to release some pre-painted minis in other formats, such as the Beholder Collector set, and minis are going to be incorporated into other products, but they are not going to be releasing any more miniatures lines or miniature sets like Lords of Madness or anything like that, or Monster Vault. So,
unfortunately, it strikes me as a move to kind of free up some capital for other things, because they might be not doing that well.
It's also a when they first set out to start doing it, they actually intended to do a line of miniatures for the big war gamers, but that never really reached that point. They only did little skirmish stuff, and when they started selling for role-playing people will just buy what they need and stop.
Sure.
Whereas war gamers buy and buy and buy and buy and buy and keep buying stuff. And so I think I bet it's Hasbro's come up and said, you're not making $1 million. Stop.
Yeah.
The other thing I spotted was we all know there was the Dungeons & Dragons movie.
Mm-hmm. And the sequel.
I haven't seen the sequel yet.
The Wrath of the Dragon God. Well, apparently now a new Dungeons & Dragons movie based on the Book of Vile Darkness is in production for Sci-Fi.
Ooh.
That's
good
not
for Monty
good.
Cook.
No, it's not good.
That's not good. Yeah. For Sci-Fi? Uh-huh.
It could do a good job.
Between the, six of us?
I'm thinking Dungeons & Dragons with Mansquito.
Yeah.
And it's like Mansquito versus Mega Piranha.
Throw in some Highlander the Source.
Oh. Oh.
In a dungeon or something. Yeah. It'll be awesome.
Uh-huh. Awesomely I think between all bad. Of us, we could come up with a bigger budget than this movie's going to get.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we be optimistic, and it's gonna kick ass,
it's gonna be
guys.
Awesome, guys.
It's gonna be
great. Well, the second one was better than the first one, but
yeah.
my dog routinely craps out things that are better than the first movie. So.
Yeah. If I remember right, I got into a car wreck the day we all went and saw that, and I didn't get to go. And you guys said you'd rather be in the car wreck.
We had a big ice storm that day when we were supposed to go see it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some Golden Globe winners, guys.
And lighter news.
Yeah. First off, is anybody aware of any of these other than me? I mean, obviously, I'm aware of all of them.
Black Swan.
I've looked at them here and there.
Inception, Social Network.
Well, obviously, the most relevant news to this would be for the Red Phone Zone would be best actress in a leading role went to Miss Natalie Portman for the Black Swan. It's her second Golden Globe. She did also win for that movie I love that she did. Closer. Very good movie. I don't know. I don't want to go over this list like we did last time.
Okay, yeah.
Best Picture went to The Social Network along with Best Director for David Fincher. I saw that movie last week and I was blown away at how good it was. It made me. Mm-hmm. It made no sense to me that it was that good.
I need to see it.
It's totally worth a watch.
Which movie is this?
I see
Social Network.
Toy Story 3 won Best Animated.
It did. I'm surprised and pleased about that.
Mm-hmm. And your favorite Christian Bale, Batman himself, has a Golden Globe now.
I saw that.
For
The Fighter. I don't mind that. I think he's a very good actor. I just think he's a fucking asshole.
And, there is that.
Colin Firth won for Best Actor in a Motion Picture. That's good for the King's Speech.
I do want to give real quick Katie Seagal in Sons of Anarchy. The TV series won for Best Performance by an Actress in a TV Series and or in a Drama, and that's a great series, and she was amazing this last season in it. So
she's almost always good.
Yeah, she's amazing in it. This second season that is what she won for is amazing. But and I haven't seen Boardwalk Empire, but it's apparently getting a lot because
sure
Steve Buscemi got that. And,
yeah. Yeah, looking at this, the only two that surprised me were Melissa Leo winning for Supporting Actress and Toy Story 3 winning for the animated movie. Those were the only two that surprised me, and I'm very pleased with Toy Story 3 winning. I just didn't think it would. But, you know, who knows? It still might go to something else come Oscar time.
Excellent. Well, I've got a few more news pieces, if you don't mind.
Okay, knock them out.
We all know that they are making a sequel to G.I. Joe, and Steve Sommers is not going to be directing it.
Correct.
Lee Byung-hun, the guy who played Storm Shadow, has basically announced that Storm Shadow will be returning for the second G.I. Joe movie.
Yay.
So, there is
Storm Shadow, yeah.
So the white ninja versus Snake Eyes, the black ninja.
Right, I thought he died.
No. He dies like a dozen times in the cartoon series.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, he's a ninja. What can I say?
Ninjas can't die.
The other bit, back into the gaming world, WizKids, the guys who put out HeroClix, and, well, I guess that's all they do right now.
They did Shadowrun for a little while.
They're also going to be, putting out a Star Trek, some Star Trek games. Well, they just announced that they are, they got the license to Lord of the Rings, so they're going to put out Lord of the Rings HeroClix now.
Cool.
Which is kind of an interesting thing. It comes out later this year.
HeroClix are a big deal. I mean, they're pretty popular. Mm-hmm.
Are they?
I love them.
Yeah,
no, I think they're cool as hell. I just didn't think they were that popular.
And I just got three more pieces of news.
I think Chris wanted to say something.
Did you hear about Susanna York?
Yeah, she died.
Yeah, Susanna York died, and she. The reason I mentioned it, she was Superman's mother.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
In the original movies.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. But yeah, she did die. Ma Kent died.
Yep. No, she didn't play Ma Kent. She played.
Yeah. You're right. She played.
Laura L.
Yeah, Laura L.
Oh,
Laura L.
Yeah.
Not a big role.
And some info just got released today was those of us who are fans of Spartacus: Blood and Sand.
Good show.
They have hired a replacement for Andy Whitfield, who had to leave the series because of his cancer.
Mm-hmm.
They have got Australian-born actor Liam McIntyre to play him. So the series is going to move forward with.
What else has Liam McIntyre done?
He has also appeared in the HBO miniseries The Pacific, and has been on Australian TV in Neighbors.
I know him from The Pacific. I knew that name. I just couldn't quite place it. Cool.
And also today, did you catch the first cast image of X-Men First Class?
Yeah, I did. Any excitement I had for that movie went away.
Oh, ow.
It doesn't look very good. I mean, I think John, it was either John or Chris, pointed out very well that James McAvoy as Professor X looks a little bit too angsty.
A lot to be angsty about.
I don't know about young Professor X.
He can't walk, he's bald.
Young Professor X can walk, and he is not bald.
Oh, well, never mind. He doesn't
another one of those movies
about.
That has potential to be really cool, or has potential to suck ass.
I'm leaning towards sucking ass. What do you guys think, John and Chris?
I think it's fun with X3.
Were these pictures composited? Like, did they, like, cut and paste these people's heads onto their bodies? Because that's what it looks like.
No, it looks to me like it might actually be Photoshopped together, but I don't think they were throwing on the bodies.
You got some nice yellow jumpers.
One of those probably Jubilee Beast.
Where's Jubilee?
Maybe that Chinese girl there?
No, that's Psylocke.
Oh.
I think.
Betsy Braddock. Who's the red-faced guy?
Your mama.
My mom doesn't look like that. She doesn't have that nice of a mustache.
Okay. I don't know who it is, and I don't care, because I had a little bit of excitement for this movie. I like the idea of it being set in the 60s, but those pictures, I don't know. And maybe it'll still be good, but I got my doubts.
It's interesting that they decided not to go with the classic five set original for the first class. They went with sort of a grab bag of random, sort of like, let's put Beast and Mystique into the first class of X-Men. This sounds great. Okay.
I don't know, man.
I got nothing.
Chris, it looked like you were wanting to say something a little earlier.
I'm just shocked. I don't know why they have Havok in it, too. Like, Cyclops' brother.
Yeah.
Yeah,
They not have Scott?
What the hell?
And the guy with the red face is Nightcrawler's father.
Right.
Belsko.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
From the Austin run.
Yeah.
So is magic going to show up in this too? That'd be neat.
No, only in your dreams, Shay.
Yeah, really.
Shit.
Ilyana.
Well. Wow. So nobody. Do you got any robot news, Shay?
Yes, actually. An interesting connection here. One of the scientific advisors on Tron Legacy was recently succeeded at doing something that hasn't been done before. Malcolm McKeever created the world's first fish bot. I know this sounds a little bit odd, but they managed to get the mechanics down to create a functional fin. So this is an actual...
It can do like the...
Yeah, it can actually swim in the water instead of using like a turbine propeller, which is a big achievement.
Sure.
In the robot world. And it's that's the big headline in robot news right now.
Fascinating. Does anybody else have anything to add?
I have nothing.
I think we covered all our news.
Yep. So awesome. Yeah. I guess stay tuned. We're going to be right back with the history of the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthoz, and then we'll get jumping and talking about our nominees. Stay tuned. And we are back with the Red Phone Zone, issue number 40. As I said before, this is our Ruthoz issue. This is when we just take a look at the four nominees that we have. Our nominees tonight are going to be Liam Neeson, Meryl Streep, Kurt Russell, and Jackie Chan. So before we do any of that, we're going to talk a little bit about the history of the Zone of Ruthoz. Ethan, how did the Zone of Ruthoz start out?
Oh, must have been, 11 years ago now? 10 years ago? Was it 10 years ago or 11 years ago?
July of 2001.
So just about 10 years ago now. I guess 9.5, if you want to be technical. The hype was sort of going around for Star Wars Episode II was about to hit theaters, or was about to start shooting. And I do believe it was Ain't It Cool News broke a story that Christopher Lee was going to be in Star Wars Episode II. But it didn't just say, hey, Christopher Lee, veteran actor, blah, 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 is going to be in Star Wars Episode II. It said Christopher fucking Lee. That was the headline. And really, that just said it all, you know. If you knew anything about Christopher Lee, Christopher fucking Lee just sort of summed it all up in one little neat word, and it worked. Yeah, you know? And that's where essentially the Zone of Ruthoz began. Those many years ago when Aaron and I were working at a video store in Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah, and then we took that information and. Like Ethan said, we were both just kind of taken aback by it because it was just kind of perfect. I mean, it said everything and it tied it up in a nice little bow, and it, you know, kind of had a little bit of rock and roll in it because it's a bad word. And we figured we could go with that. So at the time, we started up on Ethan's GeoCity website something that we called the fucking list, where we just made a list of a whole bunch of people, and basically it was, you know, Christopher fucking Lee, Bruce fucking Campbell, I can't even remember all of them, but there was probably a list.
Gabriel fucking Byrne was on there. I remember that.
Yeah, John Falcon Malkovich. A whole bunch of people like that. And it never quite made it up on the website, but we had a teaser banner up there that we were going to put it up. And then life happened, and then 10 years passed, and then I find myself doing the podcast and start thinking about the... I'd start thinking about the fucking list again. And I really wanted to start it up because I think at the time we had done 7 or 8 episodes, and I don't think one of them had passed where I didn't bring up Christopher Lee and how badass he is. And so I decided to dust out the old fucking list and started taking a look at it and decided that the fucking list didn't quite have the gravitas that it needed. So I wanted to add a little bit of... I wanted to add a little bit of awesomeness to it, and I wanted to make it sound all kinds of fancy. So I came up with the name, the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthaz. Zone being a post-Germanic word, which has its roots that come up with red. The word that red derives from is Germanic, and it's actually... Before that, it's a big, long thing. Basically, I'm just saying the something fancy of the red phone zone. And so on issue 10, yep. We named Christopher fucking Lee as the inaugural member.
Sir Christopher fucking Lee
as the inaugural inductee. But we also said that he had always been in the Zone of Ruthaz ever since we read that. So he had been in there 10 years prior. But then we decided that we would do what, Shay?
We decided to nominate and vote on who to add into the add into that list along with Christopher fucking Lee, Sir Christopher fucking Lee. Sorry,
who's okay, been there Ethan, the entire time? What really happened?
We determined that we were going to the official first inductee into the facilitators of the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthaz would be Bruce fucking Campbell. That's what we decided.
Right. There was no voting on that. It was just
not on the first one.
Yeah, we just named him. We named him, we didn't vote, and then I think, I don't know whose idea it was, maybe Ethan, maybe Shay, we decided that we would use the power of the internet, and we would get down to democracy, and we would let our viewers vote, and first time out, where it was actually a democratic process, that is when we inducted Clint fucking Eastwood. That was Ethan's nominee, and I could have been happier at that point. And at what point did we get you guys nominated? Do you remember that?
I think it was your last one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was for issue 30 when you guys nominated Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the nominees that round were Michael Keaton, Stan the Man Lee, Terrence Stamp, and Will Smith.
That
were nominated that time.
That is correct. And then Stan. How do we decide to do it? Stan the fucking Man
Stan
Lee.
Stan the fucking Man Lee. Yes.
Stan the fucking Man Lee.
You can't really jumble that up without it just sounding entirely inappropriate.
Yeah, well, maybe a little bit dirty. So yeah, we brought in the Bagged and Board guys so that they could be part of this process too. And this time around, they went and they nominated Kurt Russell. So let's just jump right into it. Why should Kurt Russell be named as the newest member of the Zone of Ruthaz?
When it comes to ultimate film badasses, who jumps into my mind first but Jack Burton himself, Kurt Russell. I grew up watching Big Trouble in Little China, absolutely loving it, made me want to drive a truck for a little while, didn't pan out, probably for the best.
Your boot, though.
Oh, I still keep a knife in my boot if I wore them. But Kurt Russell is just that quintessential badass between Jack Burton, Snake Plissken, Stuntman Mike. Badass, deserving of the title, Kurt the Muscle Russell. I just made that up.
And I think it fits. I think it fits.
He's also in
the
Tango
guy's
and
got
Cash.
The guy's got a prolific career. I mean, he's been doing film since he was a child. So,
yeah.
And he was a Disney brat.
Yep.
You know,
he was.
And I mean, full range. Yeah, the computer board tennis shoes. God, there's tons of them at this back when he was doing Disney movies, and the movie that sort of blew me away because I liked Kurt Russell, you know, I mean he's Snake Plissken, you know, I mean, come on, Snake Plissken, was the movie called Sniper?
Sniper.
Yeah, it was a made for TV movie in the 70s, and it was about the I think it was University of Texas, the Bell Tower shootings in the 70s.
Correct.
He played the sniper, and it was a very serious, very dramatic role, and he just blew me away in it. I mean, the man's also been Elvis.
Yep, twice, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me into my special mention of him, is it's maybe not one of everybody's favorite movies, but one of my favorite Kurt Russell movies is 3,000 Miles to Graceland. It's got one of my favorite ever movie quotes in it, which is, "Filters are for pussies and guys my age." And I've been saying that shit for years. I just think it's a great line. Love that line.
Please.
I love that movie. I mean, that's just like, that is like one of those quintessential Kurt Russell movies. You know, obviously he wasn't going to win an Oscar for it, and you know, it didn't make a shitload of money, but by God, it's still on those movie shelves and it still gets rented sometimes. And I think it's a lot of fun.
He's a guy that just does movies that you enjoy seeing, and it's good popcorn flicks, you know. Obviously we've mentioned Big Trouble in Little China being just phenomenal and awesome, but Escape from New York, Escape from LA, 3,000 Miles to Graceland, obviously, the Soldier, Tombstone.
Tombstone. You cannot about Kurt Russell without bringing up Tombstone.
Used Cars.
Yeah, Used Cars.
Love that movie.
Mm-hmm. Captain Ron. Yeah.
Wow. Captain Ron. Yeah. How can you forget Captain Ron?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. There was a movie, I think it was like Executive Privilege or something like this, where he played
Executive Decision.
The president.
He wasn't the president. He was an FBI guy or something like that.
But, protecting the president?
No, he was an analyst. Well,
he was just an analyst, wasn't he?
He was a CIA analyst that came up with intel.
That movie biggest letdowns, because you thought you were going to have a whole movie of Kurt Russell and Steven Seagal being badasses.
Yeah.
I'll just get blown up in the beginning.
Yeah. And I liked that part about it.
Then it becomes a Kurt Russell being a badass movie, and I'm fine with that, because I love Kurt Russell. I do like me some Steven Seagal, mind you.
What was that? What was that, John?
It turns out to be, it's Kurt Russell and John Leguizamo, Luigi, being badasses.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's true.
Oliver Platt, that guy from Terminator 2.
That'll always be that guy from Terminator 2, yeah.
And that guy that got knighted last week, but he was the bad guy. What's his name?
David Suchet.
Yeah, David Suchet. He played the bad guy in that. Now Sir David Suchet. So, yeah, I enjoy that movie, too. He's done something recently. It was fucking... I loved him as Stuntman Mike in... I loved him as Stuntman Mike. I mean, just the bravery of being such a bitch in the end when he was hurt and getting beat up. I mean, not every actor is going to do that.
Easily my favorite scene in the movie was when he just becomes a quivering little bitch at the end of the movie. I was just like, at that point, I was like, this movie is fantastic. I love it.
I liked that movie up until then, but that one, you know, I love that movie now because
of that
scene.
Pushed it over the edge.
Yeah. That was a scene of just absolutely turning it up to 11. I mean, I absolutely love that scene.
Yeah, you know, he's not like, he's not winning awards, but he's making entertaining movies that you quote, that you talk about. And, I mean, like, we were just talking about this before the show, and we're like, we gotta watch Big Trouble Little China.
Oh, yeah. I want to go see that now.
It's been too long.
Yeah, it's a great movie. You can find it cheap on Blu-ray even, so that's good. I noticed that. I saw it for like $10 on Blu-ray somewhere.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's on Hulu. It's such a classic.
He is one of those actors that has pretty much done a quintessential, at some point, some popcorn classic from really the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and even the new millennium, you know. So, I mean, timeless guy. I love him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not be disappointed at all if he wins this round.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. We'll see. One thing that talks to me about the power of Kurt Russell, I believe it was on Smodcast 47 and a half or something like that. They did a really super long one. They had guest host Malcolm Ingram on there. He's the director of Small Town Gay Bar and Jars of Fly and shit like that. Just a mainstay in the Kevin Smith universe. He went on and made the proclamation that Kurt Russell was not a movie star. And then after that episode, he got his inbox just flooded with people like, I'm going to kick your ass if I see you on the street and everything, and blah, 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 blah. And then he got an email from Kurt Russell, says, yeah, you're right. I'm not a movie star, but you know what? I'm not talking about you and my stupid little podcast. And that is typical Kurt Russell. I mean, he is a funny fucking guy. I remember another time, maybe 10 years ago, they're talking to him in an interview, asking him why he has never married his longtime sweetheart, Goldie Hawn. And he just kind of looked at him, shrugged his shoulders, and said, well, if it ain't broke, and then he walked away. It was awesome.
I mean, run a wire. Yeah.
Now, he's just one of those people that I really kind of like his, you know, his I don't give a shit persona that he gives out to the world.
You don't like it? Suck it.
Yeah. And
one of his best friends is Martin Short. They have breakfast every day together.
That guy's wise.
Ever since
Martin Short.
Oh. I didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that either.
Hmm.
That is pretty awesome.
All right. And that's is this going to be our case for Kurt Russell?
Yeah, absolutely. Go to redphonezone.com and vote for Kurt Russell if you want to see Kurt fucking Russell. Moving right on, Shay, I believe your nominee was Meryl Streep. What can you say about
Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep.
Probably the most, just start off with the most kind of important thing to me is it takes zero time for me to remember who Meryl Streep is. Like, she comes to mind instantaneously, and that's saying something for me, because I'm like, who's that guy? That guy, he's in Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, things like that. And but Meryl Streep, bam, I think the first movie I ever saw her in was Defending Your Life, where she played the love interest, and also there was
Marv Albert movie.
Yeah. That was Meryl Streep, and she was also in Death Becomes Her, which is something I remember distinctly.
It was her and Goldie Hawn, wasn't it?
Yeah, and
and Bruce Willis.
Yeah, Bruce Willis. Yeah.
And recently I've seen her in a really good movie with Anne Hathaway, interestingly enough, called Devil Wears Prada. And she's got an amazing monologue where she talks about the cerulean blue sweater. It's just a phenomenal thing that I would recommend any theatrical person who wants to do a monologue, pick that bit up and try and get the gravitas that she had as she was explaining to this little person who thought she knew everything, do you understand why you did this? And then explains it step by step exactly how that sweater got into her hand. It was just phenomenal. She was born Mary Louise Streep, and interesting she kept her last name, in June 22nd, 1949, and she is considered one of the most professional and critically acclaimed women in Hollywood. She's received so many awards. It seems like when you're looking at her work, it seems like it's just everything she's been in has practically got an award. I think it's like skimming through here, and it's like, oh, here's one that she didn't get an award for, as opposed to the other way around, or at least nominated for an award.
Yeah.
Because
she is the most nominated actress in the history of the Academy Awards. She has only won two, though.
I do have the awards pulled up here. She has won. She's working for the most Academy Award nominations of any actor, male or female. And her first nomination was for Deer Hunter in 1979, which is apparently a phenomenal movie that I need to watch at some point. I have never seen it. She is the most nominated performer for Golden Globe Award. She has 25 nominations. She's won the most Golden Globes overall since her win for Julie and Julia in 2010. And she recently received a star, 1998 is not that recently, it's 12 years ago. She's got her star in Hollywood Walk of Fame. 2003, she was awarded an honorary César Award by the French Academy d'Arts et Techniques de Cinéma in 2004 at the Moscow International Film Festival. She was honored with the Stanislavski Award for the outstanding achievement in career of acting and devotion to the principles of Stanislavski's school. In 2004, she received the AFI Lifetime Achievement Award, AFI Life Achievement Award. And in May 27th, 2004, was proclaimed Meryl Streep Day by Manhattan Borough President C. Virginia Fields. In 2009, she was awarded an honorary doctorate of fine arts by Princeton University. In 2010, she was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Letters, and and awarded an honorary Doctor of Arts degree by Harvard. So she's got two honorary doctorates for her work. There's an interesting thing that she, there's an interesting quote that she's that I imagine they use in teaching instructional classes. You know, like Mrs. Meryl Streep says that accents and vocal work is such an important and element of the way she does things, because she believes that if she's speaking in her own voice, then she's not acting. If she's portraying a character, the first thing she starts to work on is how this person speaks and how this person acts, and intentionally creates changes so that unless you've seen her in an interview, you've never actually listened to how Meryl Streep talks. None of her characters are anything but a creation of her own craft, which I think is just phenomenal. It's definitely sounds like the right way to do things. She's been in theater. She's done theater work, but not nearly as much. She started off a little bit in the theater realm, but then moved more into other things. But she recently went back to stage acting in The Seagull, which won a. It was 20 years out of the stage, and she went back and immediately won an award for this, which is not surprising at all. And then she's also gotten into doing some like theater in Central Park and public theater stuff, which is all New York type of things. What else did I have pulled up here? That was that, and recently, she's been getting into some more. It seems like for the most part, her work has been pretty heavy, except for like stuff like that. The things that I can remember, which is like Death Becomes Her and
Devil Wears Prada, wasn't particularly heavy.
Well, yeah, it's true. It's a little more of a Cinderella story, and it seems like she's getting into more of that kind of stuff by doing.
She's really one of those actresses that honestly does what she wants to do, and she's got every right to at this point. I mean, she's got nothing to prove to any of us that she's a fantastic actress. I mean, you pointed out that she is the most nominated
actor.
She is the most nominated actor in both the Golden Globes and the Academy Awards. That kind of works against her a lot of the time because, she's already got two. She got her second one for mm-hmm. Sophie's Choice, and that was 82, 83, something like that. So, I mean, we're talking almost 30 years now that she's gone without a nomination. I don't think she's...
Without an Oscar. She's had nominations.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Oscar. I don't think she's capable of not turning in an Oscar
It seems like she's incapable.
I mean, she seems 100% incapable of not being that good. I mean, she was fucking awesome in Mamma Mia, for God's sakes. She was good in She-Devil. I mean, she's good in these movies that she shouldn't be that good in, but she is.
Because she carries it.
She's just that great of an actress. I mean, what do you guys think?
I think she's fantastic. What did you call her?
America's sweetheart.
Oh. Yes.
I believe that. I mean, anything you see her in, she brings that gravitas to it.
Oh, yeah.
She owns the screen anytime you see her anything. Devil Wears Prada is like an example of that, too. With just this commanding performance. Not just the character. It's more her than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
I know when I was, I don't know if I've said it or not, but when I was, when we were coming up with our nominations for this, she was my runner-up. Meryl Streep is one of those actresses that sort of embodies that essence of just the fine actors and actresses of their craft. And, it's one of those people that, 30, 40, 50, 60 years from now, they're going to be looking back at her performances and going, she's an amazing actress, an amazing woman. And
this is what you want to do. Copy this person.
Yeah, exactly. We look back now at, Carol Lombard and, Grace Kelly and actresses like that. And, in another 30, 40, 50 years, they're going to be looking back and going, well, who's going to be the Glenn Close now? Meryl Streep. For some reason, I get that mixed up.
I do too. From their mid '90s work, because for the longest time, I thought it was Meryl Streep in the 101 Dalmatians live action.
I can see that.
Meryl Streep one of those. She's really just one of those actresses that just knocks it out of the park, even if she's doing a craptastic movie.
Yeah, I mean, she is the female Olivier. She's the female mm-hmm. Brando. I mean, I just don't think that we've had an actress the same caliber as her ever. I mean, you know, it's like some of like the better actors have come and gone already. I don't think anybody touches Meryl Streep. I think she's absolutely in a class all of her own.
She's also multilingual. There's a anecdote about how she was brought in for a casting and the director spoke in Italian and called her like an ugly dog or something like this, and she got the part when she responded in fluent Italian back to him, and he went oh.
Yeah, that's
what's great about Meryl Streep is, you know, for being such a great actress and having such a great career, she's not someone who doesn't take her career lightly, and you know, she's very she has a lot of fun with it. And if you don't think that, just look at Stuck on You, you know, where she plays.
She was great in that.
You know, that's one of those roles where, you know, I'm always kind of on the fence with her. Sometimes I think she's good. Sometimes, you know, I don't think she's that great. But with that role, I was like, all right, I do like Meryl Streep. She's got that for me.
Yeah. The last little bits of stuff that I had was that it does seem like she's going into some more light stuff. Like she was in a movie about the Prairie Home Companion, which is a very funny thing.
Robert Altman's last movie.
Yeah, she's been doing voice
with Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, Lindsay Lohan and Meryl Streep, and you know, it seems funny. I guess Lindsay Lohan probably deserves a lot more credit than she gets.
No.
But she's going to be in an upcoming movie called Mommy and Me with Tina Fey, who's another big comedic actor.
Yeah,
actress.
The name rings a bell.
She's one of those actresses, though. Meryl Streep's one of those actresses who can do the serious drama, but that she could turn around and do good comedy. And you know, as they say, I mean, you know, dying's easy, comedy's hard. That's how talented the woman is.
Yeah. She is absolutely the whole picture when it comes down to it. I mean, just absolutely. I mean, she's everything anybody should want in an actress, and I think that she would be. I think she'd be a great addition to the Zone. Ethan, why should we be voting for Jackie Chan?
Yes, entirely on the other end of the spectrum, we have Jackie Chan, a 56-year-old actor now, has been making movies since the mid-70s, early 70s, started off as a stuntman. Go around and you ask any geek out there who Jackie Chan is, and they're going to be able to tell you.
Yeah, and in any country.
Started off doing... Yeah. For the longest time, I don't know if it's still true, he was the biggest box office draw in the world. He was such a huge economic. He's an economic icon basically in the world. And then when China took over Hong Kong, they gave him special dispensation where he could basically come and go as he pleases from mainland China, go to Japan, he can go anywhere he wants. And that's because he is the movie star, you know, of Asia. But Jackie Chan never really broke into the American market until very recently with movies like Rush Hour and Shanghai Noon, stuff like that. And really, now he sort of goes back and forth. But Jackie Chan, the part that brings me to why I think he deserves to be on a facilitator is just how humble the man is. He's one of those guys who goes and does what he wants because he genuinely just wants to do it. He said, "Hey, I want to learn how to I want to sing and do an album." He did. You know, he's actually done several albums. He's done soundtracks on various on many of his movies that he's done in Hong Kong and China, and some might not think that's great. Including me, he's not very good. But he doesn't care. He just does it because he can.
And, like Christopher fucking Lee. He's got some albums out, too.
Exactly. And he's one of those guys who you really do believe that he genuinely loves his fans. And he looks like the smile he gives you and the thumbs up that he gives you is this genuine, you know, this genuine friendly gesture that he is giving you. And, you know, Jackie Chan, who has brought us great action kung fu classics like Drunken Master, Drunken Master 2, Half a Loaf of Kung Fu, a Police Story, all the Police Story films, Police Story, Police Story 2, Super Cop, First Strike, and New Police Story. He writes, he directs, he composes, and then he turns around and he does these movies for kids, in that he wants kids to have something that's entertaining. He turns around and does serious dramas that, you know, showcase that the guy has some acting ability. And really, you know, who doesn't remember, once you see a Jackie Chan movie, you always remember the Jackie Chan fight scenes.
Yep.
You remember Rumble in the Bronx. Not a great movie, but man, those action scenes were amazing.
That was the first movie I remember seeing him in.
Me too.
Yeah. And it's one of those that you look at movies now, and you know, you see movies like Red, or you see, you know, any of the movies that are out, you know, action movies that are coming out now have these, you know, quick-paced action scenes, these, you know, quirky action scenes like Jason Statham movies, anything like that. And it's all because of movies that Jackie Chan was doing back in in the 80s and 80s and 90s. Those movies, he, you know, decided to throw the box out and, you know, jump up on walls and do all this crazy crap. And he completely reinvented the American action market without really even being in it. And I think that in and of itself makes him an amazing effect on film and on movies and geekdom. And not to mention also, go ahead.
I think of Jackie Chan as the Charlie Chaplin of Kung Fu. I mean, his effect is going to be absolutely incalculable.
And actually, one of his biggest influences is Buster Keaton.
That would make sense.
Yeah, one of his biggest idols and biggest loves is Buster Keaton. In one of his movies, he actually he does his own reenactment his version of the classic Buster Keaton, where he's standing and the facade of the building falls and he goes through the window.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Jackie Chan does that in his own way, except I believe he does it backwards, where he's running down the side of the building as the facade is collapsing.
Right.
And I can't mention Jackie Chan without mentioning his outtakes.
Yeah.
You know, for the longest time, I for one am upset that movies nowadays with Jackie Chan don't show his outtakes, because really, that was part of the fun. You'd always want to see the end and see, okay, how did he fuck himself up this time?
Yeah.
You know,
how did he almost die this time? Yeah.
Yeah, the man has broken every bone in his body at least once.
I think there was.
He has a hole in his skull from when he fell shooting Armor of God. He fell about 20 feet from a branch when it broke and hit landed on a rock.
Yeah.
He was pronounced dead on set several times.
Yeah.
The dude is hardcore. He has worked with you know, other people that I think if they were still alive, they would be considered facilitators. Like, he's worked with Bruce Lee. He was a stuntman in Enter the Dragon and a stuntman on The Big Boss. And, you know, he's one of those guys that his genuine love of fans, genuine love of his work keeps him going. And, you know, I love the guy. You know, what more can I say about Jackie Chan? You know,
cool. What do you guys think?
I absolutely love Jackie Chan. There's no reason that he shouldn't be inducted, if not today, at some other date. But sure. I would be very happy for him to beat Kurt Russell today. I love him. Rumble in the Bronx, not only my first real introduction, yet I didn't realize that he was in Cannonball Run 2 so years later.
It doesn't matter.
But, you know, like you said at the end of the films, my favorite was Rumble in the Bronx, when they show him putting a sock that looked like a sneaker for his cast that was on his leg.
Uh-huh, and then, yeah.
You know,
yeah, he had to have a cast specially designed for him so he could finish that movie, and he donated it to Planet Hollywood after the film.
So that's cool. I didn't know that. Uh-huh.
He's a guy that suffers for his art.
And, oh yeah. And he wrote a book many years ago called I Am Jackie Chan, and in it he talks about his injuries and how every morning, and this was, I think, more than 10 years ago when he wrote this book, but he every morning when he wakes up, one, he can't sleep on a bed because it hurts his back too much, and two, he has to, one of the things he does first thing in the morning when he wakes up is he hangs from the door frame to stretch out his fingers because of the arthritis of breaking all of his fingers so many times.
Oh,
the man is insane.
And he was also Mr. Miyagi.
I wanted to talk about Mr. Miyagi because...
That's true.
I wanted to talk about that because I...
Yeah.
I am in no way, shape, or form pretending to be a Jackie Chan expert. I probably haven't even seen all of his American films, but I have not seen him turn in a performance as good as he did in The Karate Kid. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it. I mean, it was a heartfelt... dramatic performance, and I think that, I mean, I don't expect him to get an Oscar for it or anything, but I haven't really even heard anybody speak well of it, and I just thought it was a great performance. I mean, I thought he was great in that movie.
He was great in that movie. That's the thing, is the guy's got range. I mean, he does the slapstick type of comedy, but then he turns around and does a performance like Mr. Han in the new Karate Kid movie. You know, the guy's an amazing talent, you know, and just one of those guys that really genuinely enjoys what he does.
One of my favorite movies, actually, one we haven't talked about yet, but The Forbidden Kingdom. Oh. I mean, definitely one of his more American movies, but it's kind of more done as one of those love letters to just both American and, you know, Chinese Hong Kong action film. I loved him in that. He kind of straddles that line. He can do that serious role, but then he does, like, the slapsticky stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And there was a time back when Rumble in the Bronx came out that I went on a mission and found all of his movies he'd done to that day, which at that time, you know, DVD wasn't huge. I had to crawl around dives on the internet, and I even when I went to visit my sister in New York, had to journey into Chinatown to find a few of his movies. And the man has done some shit-tastic movies. Some, I mean, wow, bad movies. And he has done movies where they bill starring Jackie Chan, and he's in it for about 32 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I remember hearing an interview about how he... they were trying to ask him how he was able to do the things that he's able to do, the physical acting that he's able to do and the stunts he's able to do. And he said that he basically didn't want to talk about it because it was such an uncomfortable process, and it started so young, and he felt like he had sort of lost some of his childhood, and that while he was able, it resulted in him being able to do some really phenomenal things that helped to make him really famous. He was like, nah, I don't think that was really the right way to, you know, I wouldn't wish my childhood on anybody else. Just, I think it's an interesting thing that for someone to say, like, this is what I am, but no, don't do that.
Yeah, well, his parents essentially sold him to Peking Opera School, was what would happen. And, you know, I highly recommend that people try to read his autobiography put out called I Am Jackie Chan. It's a really good book.
I never have read that, and I've wanted to.
I'm sure you can find it in the discount clearance bin at the Half Price bookstore at this point. So
cool.
But it's a good book. It's a good read.
Excellent.
Which was great.
Jackie Chan Adventures.
The Jackie Chan Adventures cartoon was awesome.
Yeah.
what was that, Chris?
Only person nominated so far that has had their own cartoon. So that gets special mention.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Probably one of the only people that have had their own cartoon. I mean, not that, but...
And like Mr. T, Jackie Chan, and...
Yeah.
Oh, John Candy had his own cartoon.
Yeah.
So cool.
Oh well, you know, hey. So that is my case for Jackie Chan.
And a good case you made. Now we're going to move on to the case I'll be making for Mr. Liam Neeson. 58-year-old actor. He needs absolutely no introduction, especially not from me. A very, very, very prolific actor. He has been acting. He made his breakthrough role, and I don't remember what year it is. I didn't write it down because I kind of like doing these off the cuff more than going and actually doing a, you know, figuring out a script or anything like that.
Or reading the Wikipedia.
Or reading the Wikipedia. But, you know, I'll use the Wikipedia for, like, you know, for a little bit here and there. But first movie that he got, that he really ever did was Excalibur, where he played Gawain. And I haven't seen that movie in such a long time, but I remember seeing him in that and just finding him to be incredibly interesting. He is a guy that, and we've talked a little bit about it on the show before, but he is a guy that, you know, as of late, at least in the last 10 years, I mean, he has been that go-to mentor, that mentor figure that people go and they grab if they want to get, if they just want to bring like a little bit of extra weight, a little bit of extra gravitas to a role, or to a movie, to a scene. You know, it started with, I'm not positive when it started, but we were talking about it at one point. We were wondering if it might have been, The Phantom Menace, where he played Qui-Gon Jinn. He did that. He did. He was also. He played Orlando Bloom's father in The Kingdom of Heaven. He played Leonardo DiCaprio's father in Gangs of New York. He did play Zeus in the.
Pretty good job, I think.
He was all right. As in The Clash of the Titans. Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins.
That was impressive.
I loved him as Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins. He's just, I just don't. Sometimes I wonder. I'm not very good at just explaining him to people. I mean, he's just so. If he does a movie, I want to see it. Plain and simple. He did
Hannibal in A-Team.
Yeah, he was Hannibal
love
in A-Team. He was. He played Aslan in the. Lion Witch and the Wardrobe movies. What are those called?
Oh, wow.
Narnia.
Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah, he was Aslan in those. He was...
Qui-Gon.
He was Qui-Gon Jinn. He was
the ultimate mentor.
I just think that he is just a great actor. One of my favorite movies he ever did was Taken. It was a fun little revenge movie. And
I remember seeing the trailer for that and going... Liam Neeson kicking ass. I am so there.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those movies that if he hadn't been in it, I probably wouldn't have seen the movie. But since he was there, I was like, hey, "Yeah, I'm
okay,
game."
Sure.
Yeah, that got me interested enough to see it. What do you guys think? I mean, I just, you know, I sometimes don't have the words in me to explain how awesome somebody is, and I do think that Liam Neeson would be a fantastic addition to the Order of the Zone of Ruthless.
Oh yeah,
I always remember him. I will always remember him from Krull.
From Krull.
you're forgetting one of the I think one of his best films, which is Schindler's List.
Yeah, god damn it. I did forget Schindler's List. I mean, he was just such a amazing performance in that. I mean, an absolutely amazing performance in that, getting himself an Oscar nomination. Another movie that got him a Golden Globe nomination was I don't remember what year it was, but it was Kinsey, where he played the famous sex professor, and he got robbed out of an Oscar nomination for that movie.
Have you mentioned that he also played your favorite Batman villain?
Yeah, Ra's al Ghul. I did bring that up. I mean, he was fantastic as Ra's al Ghul. And once again, he was one of those things that added, you know, that just added that little bit of extra weight that you needed to make just a few more people take this Batman movie a little bit more seriously than they would have otherwise. Mm-hmm.
I need to throw this out there, too. Darkman.
Yeah, I just read that.
Darkman, yeah, forgot
Darkman.
About that.
Hells yeah.
Two other historical figures, Michael Collins and Rob Roy.
Yeah.
Rob Roy was excellent.
I love Rob Roy.
Yeah, Michael Collins is good, too.
He's an awesome villain, too. Tim Roth is great in everything, too, though.
Mm-hmm.
He is one of those actors that has been seemingly working since the dawn of time. Because, I mean, he was in a Dirty Harry movie. He was in the Deadpool. And, you know, Darkman. I mean, the guy's list of credits, while not as long or prolific as some of the others in the Zone of Ruthaz, are still equally as impressive in just that the gemstones that he has in there going, well, he's touched this genre. He's touched this genre. He's gone into this geek genre. He's done this. I mean,
Speaking
it was
of,
just ample, you know?
Speaking of things he's touched, he's obviously a humble man because he voiced a character on The Simpsons.
Yep.
He was the Catholic priest who converts Bart and Homer to Catholicism, apparently.
Yep, that's true. He also turned down the... He turned down, mind you. He didn't campaign. He didn't do any of this stuff. He turned down the role of James Bond when they were looking to recast it at the time when Pierce Brosnan got it. So he actually has enough clout to say, no, I don't want to do that. And that's too bad because that's like one of those few genres he hasn't touched was a Bond movie.
He's in video games. He's the voice of the father in Fallout 3.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The guy just works on a bajillion things.
Yeah.
But the great thing about him is he spent most of his career being just a really great character actor. Mm-hmm. And you were aware of him, you know, you loved all the films that he's done, but it's really in the last couple of years that he's really broken out where everyone's like, oh, it's Liam Neeson, we gotta go see it. You know, he's under everybody's radar, and then all of a sudden just kind of really hit big.
Yeah, I think the first time I remember distinctly going, oh, Liam Neeson was Schindler's List.
I think the first time I remember distinctly seeing him was Nell. Wasn't he in Nell?
He was in Nell.
Probably.
Yeah, it seems like that might have been like one of the first things I remember seeing him in. I was too young for Dragon Slayer, but I do remember like when I saw that, I was impressed by this guy.
Was he in Dragon Slayer?
Or, I'm sorry, not Dragon. God damn it, Excalibur. Excuse me, Excalibur.
Oh, okay. He was in Excalibur?
Yeah, he was Gwaian. In Excalibur.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember him.
Yeah,
from
there you
Excalibur,
go.
But
to me, if I could vote on this list, I think I would vote for Liam Neeson. I had to vote for Kurt Russell.
Sure.
Because of the nomination, but I think I would have all these people. I think he's just kind of that hardcore actor, character actor who's done all those kind of genres and is probably the better actor of everyone on this list.
Oh yeah, well, I don't know about that. I mean, we got Meryl Streep on this list, so I don't know that he is the best actor. He's definitely the best male actor, but yeah, he's just somebody that I will literally go see anything that he does.
He's also a stout Catholic and an OBE, officer in the Order of British Army.
Yeah, he's got an OBE. He's also got the distinction of unofficially having the largest penis in Hollywood. They say that he pushes 14 inches, and that has been backed up several times. So, I don't know. I mean...
I think if I was saying... I'd be backed up several times as well.
Yeah.
So you're saying he's a star. He's a big, bright, shining star.
He's a big, big bright shining star with a big old cock also, apparently. But yeah, I mean, I love Liam Neeson. I absolutely love Liam Neeson. I mean, I cannot stress that enough. I hope he wins. If he doesn't, oh well, because he'll win. He'll
nominate. If he doesn't, he's going to get nominated again.
And again. Because I love him. But speaking of that, why don't we go and just move on and get into our outro section. We'll name who the newest member of the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthoz is. Stay tuned. All right, Ethan, bring it up.
I've been drumming up some more votes here. I posted on Facebook and stuff. So,
woo. All right.
As of right now, we've had 16 votes.
Holy shit!
Awesome.
And all of them for Kurt Russell.
Well, do you want me to look now?
Yeah, it's
go ahead.
Now
look.
Is
we're like kind of like in between segments right now. We'll just come back with them.
All righty. Everyone has at least one vote.
Yeah.
This is going to be fascinating.
Why is it a three-way tie?
No, it's a two-way tie.
Oh yeah.
Oh really?
No.
Who are they?
Kurt Russell and Liam Neeson.
Woo!
Hey.
Yeah,
both with 43.75% of the vote, with 7 votes each.
Okay.
One vote for Meryl Streep and one vote for Jackie Chan.
Okay.
Okay, so why don't we just get right back into it, okay? Because now we actually have to use the we have to figure this shit out now. Okay,
we have 5 men here,
and
this.
We are back with the outro section on issue number 40 of the Red Phone Zone, the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthoz. At this point, we have tabulated the votes, and right now, who has? Why don't you name off the votes from highest to lowest, Ethan?
Well,
I'm sorry, lowest to highest.
Lowest to highest. All right. Well, we have, of the four nominees, we have one vote for Jackie Chan. He has one vote for Meryl Streep. Then we have, do you want me to go ahead and name the winner at this point?
We
go ahead and name the winner.
All righty. We have a two-way tie with seven votes each, 43.75% of the vote on each one for Kurt Russell and Liam Neeson. So a first ever tie for facilitator of the endowed order of the Zone of Ruthos.
Oh, crud. No, now what are we going to do?
So now, actually written into the bylaws of the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthos, let me go ahead and bring that up, because I do believe I said we would vote again, or do I just break the tie?
It just goes down to you.
The reason why both of them can't be inducted?
Well,
other than the fact that that was written into the rules.
Just one winner every time.
Could have read those.
Let's see. Man, this is just riveting radio.
It's kicking.
It is.
Listen as we say nothing and look at the internet.
Hold on while we look at the bylaws. All right.
Read the rules of Ruthos.
Read the rules of Ruthos, I believe.
I could read this out loud while you look for what you're looking for, but...
In the case of a tie, the final decision lies with Aaron. It's good to be king.
Hey,
okay. Yep. In this case, as the tie lies with me, basically what we have is we have five people at in the voting thing. I'm going to open up the vote one more time because I don't feel that it would be fair for me to just pick the winner since one of my nominees is the winner. And that would not be. So do we have two votes for Kurt Russell on the bag to board side?
I have to say, you know, I enjoy Kurt Russell, but I think Liam Neeson is a better actor.
And I just said when you were talking about Liam Neeson that he was my overall vote. You know, I had to vote for him because he was our nominee, but I'll give it to Liam Neeson.
I think that's two from Liam Neeson on this end.
Shay?
I think I'm going to side with Chris's argument that he is he's probably a better actor. And so I'm going to go ahead and go with Liam Neeson.
Ethan?
Well, it's a moot point. We got 3 out of 5 now. I'm going to go with who I voted for originally, and that was Kurt Russell.
Hey!
All right. So...
There it is.
But
But if you vote...
If I voted for Kurt Russell, wouldn't we be back to a tie?
No.
It'd be 3-2. Well, if you're counting... Two votes from
we are.
They both get their own.
Fine folks. Okay. I still don't see why we can't have both in there.
Yeah.
To have a tie.
Let's do a tie.
Kurt Russell and Liam Neeson.
We got Kurt Russell and Liam Neeson.
This is our biggest turnout on voting since starting the Zone of Ruthos, and I think that is an awesome, way to go.
That is actually cool. Shay asked me before the show who I thought was going to win. I said I thought it was going to be either Kurt Russell
or
Jackie Chan. My reasons for that is because I assume John and Chris and Ethan all tried to drum up support on their websites and, you know, try to get votes that way. Because I just kind of threw it up. Like, I threw I went to all these people's official sites and threw shit up there, and I threw it up on Twitter as well. But I'm happy.
I actually didn't do any campaigning for Jackie. I love Jackie Chan.
He campaigns for
really,
himself.
Honestly, any of those four could have won, and I would have been happy. So I was just like, people, go vote.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, here it is. Go vote, please.
I thought Jackie Chan was going to get it just because of name recognition. Like, he has done such a huge body of work that so many people just love, not even just in like that thought-provoking.
He's so singular of an individual, yeah.
His movies for fun. Then you walk out being like, man, that was fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kurt Russell and Liam Neeson.
That'll be interesting.
It's going to be awesome.
But yeah, congratulations, Red Phone Zone history. We have a tie. Henceforth, you shall be known as Kurt fucking Russell and Liam fucking Neeson. Congratulations, gentlemen. You've earned it. So, all that being said, this has been a lot of fun, and it's really kind of cool that we got the turnout that we did. Kind of weird we had to figure shit out with Skype, but hey, we did get it figured out, so that's a good thing.
Massive synergy connections going on here.
Okay, so when are you guys doing a show again?
Sunday. We'll do that again Sunday.
You're gonna be up on Ustream?
Skype? Oh, Ustream, right.
It should be. If everything works out well, we should be back in our main studio.
Okay, that'll be good. So yeah, listen. Is there a link to that on bagtheboard.com?
Yes, there is. We put up a link every week when we're broadcasting.
Okay. Yeah. So you usually do that about 7, 8 o'clock.
Usually about probably 8, 8:30.
Oh, okay. Very cool. So yeah, check out bagtheboard.com and listen to their show. I think it's a lot of fun. It's one of those ones that downloads to my iPod every single week, and I look forward to it. Next week, you can tune in next Wednesday for Red Phone Zone issue number 41. This time around, we're going to be getting back into the swing of things where we're going to be doing a We Make It of the Fantastic Four movie, which will be fun because that is actually going to be a reboot. And so, I know some of us are very pleased with the Fantastic Four movie. Some of us are not. So it'll make for an interesting discussion. And then we're going to be going with an Ethan-suggested top six of top six action heroes, which is kind of a fallout from the top six movie villains that we did last season. So that should be an awful lot of fun. And then we're going to be wrapping everything up with a Watch This on, once again, an Ethan-suggested topic of Torchwood. What do you guys have to say?
I know that Jack is going to be on my action hero top six list from
Jack Burton.
Jack Burton from Big Trouble Little China.
Kurt
Russell himself.
Kurt fucking Russell himself.
Captain Jack.
Captain
Jack.
What
can I say, you know?
Yep. Top six action heroes. That's going to be a fun show. I'm looking forward to doing that. And hopefully the weather doesn't suck next week so we can actually do this shit in house.
We're all snowed in.
Yeah.
Slip and slide to get over here today.
Well, Chris, John, it's been a pleasure as always.
Thanks. Yeah.
Good to have you.
Yeah, so get to thinking about who you want to nominate next time. We're going to be naming out our next nominees on issue 44. So, was that? Is it 44? Yeah, 44.
Yeah, 44.
So we got about
that, 44, yeah. And that will be the end of season 2 as well.
Yes, it will.
We're leaving on a cliffhanger.
Ooh, dun dun dun. But yeah, well, until then, I am Aaron.
I'm Shay.
I'm Ethan.
We're the Bag and Boardcast.
All right, let your geek flag fly.
Like anything.